This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
I had just started a coffee when Richard, my very large and handsome son, appeared. He is known far and wide for his nosy ear. "Why are you still in your pajamas?" I asked. He answered, "What is this crap, Mother? This life is short and terrible. What is this metaphysical shit? What is this disease you intelligentsia are always talking about?" First we said, "Intelligentsia? Us?" Oh, the way words lie down under decades, then the union of restless diggers, out of sheer insomnia, pulls them up. Beggars for the young, but for us they look like flowers of nostalgia that grew in Mother's foreign garden. What did my mother say? "Darling, you should have come to the town hall last night. The whole intelligentsia was there." My uncle strictly, "The intelligentsia will never permit it." So I laughed. But Jack said, "Don't dare talk to your mother like that, Richard. Don't you dare." "Ma," Richard said, "get his brains out of the pickle jar. It's no insult. Everyone knows the intelligentsia strikes the spark, so that they'll be relevant for a long time, striking sparks here and there." "Of course," he explained, "the fire of revolution would only be advanced, contained, and put to productive use by the working class. Let me tell you, Jack, the intelligentsia better realize this." I wish I had written that, but didn't. It was Grace Paley, 1985. So let me continue with the 80s. Sometime in October, in the year of a great thaw, 1989, I received a phone call to pay an homage to Mother Russia. Was there by November 20th, Western calendar. My bit of Pushkin, Evgeny Onegin, that year the season was belated. The wind of change already blew into the face of time. I was a musicologist then, a member of the Union of Croatian Composers, and by that virtue, also a member of SOCOI, Federal Union of Composers of Yugoslavia. Every autumn, I will call it an autumn to avoid the fall, or any semblance with the always precarious spring awakenings, the unions of this kind would make exchanges. People, more or less prominent, would travel to the eventful places. The goal, as prescribed, was to listen to music and to report back. A delegate, which is how the participant guests were called, a person from some part of Yugoslavia, timely assigned and possibly well screened, decided not to or could not travel. I was a last moment exchange for the exchange. I knew of the Moscow Autumn International Contemporary Music Festival and never dreamed I would get there. Discussed the urgency of the call with my then boss and my then husband, sent the passport for a visa stamp and packed a suitcase. I also contacted my very best ally, third program of Radio Zagreb, letting them know I'm going abroad, ready to take my tape recorder with me. They did not ask which abroad. Instead, they said, "We liked your last contribution to do with Dr. Faust, the weird opera by Ferruccio Busoni. Get what you can and let us know." A logic of bipolarity, home abroad, a non-existent villa, a comunalka. I love the broadness of this abroad, Russia in books and music scores only for me at this time, a union everywhere. Being a capital, Moscow could be reached only through capital, even then. In this sense, Zagreb was a mere province. So I took a Brotherhood and Unity train, quite similar in direction and speed to the Orient Express, slept in a very fine hotel, not Moskva, my absolute favorite, still some resentment there, and went to the early mass at the Serbian Orthodox Church, as that was the place where the bus came to take us to Surchin Airport. One Tupolev or another, I was flying. It may sound strange here and now that all flyers were also smoking, drinking, surely due to the under-examined existential anxiety mixed with some pleasure, and that we ate very well, all for the price of the ticket. We reached Moscow at high noon, as appropriate. You may ask, where was I to stay and what was I to do? No Russian to speak of or with. No worries. All ever arriving were always to look for their very best new friend, who will carry a sign with their name at Sheremetyevo. I looked. There was a tall woman with Alexander Wagner on paper. Not quite as it should be, Alexandra, but I rushed to her with an equal enthusiasm, eager to report my arrival on the Russian soil. You are a woman, she asked. What else could I be? I asked in a fine Jewish tradition, always responding to the question with a question, yet uncritically mixing the what's and the why's as a Catholic would do. Oh, nothing, but some colleagues from the Moscow Composers Union will be surprised, she said. If not disappointed, she said. Be it due to a fax or a telegram, Zagreb, Belgrade, or Moscow, I arrived as a textual male, a gendered mistake. This undermined the traditional rules of hosting. A boy would meet a girl would meet a boy. Instead of a dashing male delegate, my hired host, companion, advisor on the rules of currency, overseer, a young woman from Omsk, an economist by formation, ambitious by necessity, beautiful by genetic disposition, met a provincial creature not very different than herself. She knew that I would not pay for her meals, since when is a socialist woman paying for another socialist woman? She feared and told me so that I will ask her to go shopping for the cheap Chinese silk in abundance in Moscow then and treasured among the female delegates she encountered in the past. I smelled a looming disaster, but also felt a sort of motherly tenderness, not that I knew that what that was, my only child, still a decade away. The biggest inconvenience I inflicted on her was finding an obscurely wonderful Melodia shop with LPs sold for nothing, including my very male heroes, Dmitri Shostakovich and Bulat Okudzhava. I dragged her also to the dance performance at the Bursting October Hall by Margaret Jenkins, whose company, founded in San Francisco in 1973, was on its first, I believe also last, Soviet tour. Where I did not take her was a Moscow suburb to deliver a gift to the translator of a well-known Croatian writer, signed by the writer himself. These other hosts told me to get rid of the official company so that we can spend an evening, or that they can spend an evening, discussing Russian formalism and what might a life be like under Boris Yeltsin. She also felt no grand love for Swan Lake at Bolshoi, nor for the fountain of Bakhchisara at Kirov, for we went to Leningrad as well, and I cannot recall that any drink was more wonderful than the tea served to us in the sleeper train, with the name of the star, something like Krasnaya Zvezda, or that anyone was more obnoxious than the weekend tours from Finland, residing in our dreary postmodern Leningrad hotel, land of no prohibitions. As you hear, I still think of her and of what she may have become. Omsk, Petrograd, Moscow, Riga, Atlanta. Is she ever listening to contemporary music, say, Doom, a Sigh by Istvan Marta, Pater Noster by Arvo Pärt? Does she think of me, or was I just a job? Which would be just to think. The long black skirt I have given her as a gift must be long gone. I was a job, only with a wrong title. Can anyone ever arrive to Moscow, 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 the fourth or some yet other Rome, and not be a mistake? Benjamin seems to tell us no. Katerina Clark seems to tell us no in a different way. She writes as if she had no compassion for Benjamin in her Moscow, the fourth Rome. She says that Western criticism lionizes Benjamin and has tended to savor his every pronouncement of the Moscow trip, as if he had been undertaking the heroic voyage of the questing intellectual. She adds another perspective on an unheroic private trip, a minor moment in the proselytizing campaign of Soviet power. Following Clark, and if I dare put myself in the same sentence, Benjamin was using what was offered, subsidized accommodation and assorted privileges by one or another vox. When out of that holding frame, he was inept, dependent on translators, missing the car rides, no joy to his fantasized lover. What may have been hot in Capri, despite all historical incongruity, I imagine them no less than making love on the slippery slope of the roof of Adalberto Libera's Casa Malaparte, true predecessors of Jacques Louis Godard's Contempt. What may have been caught in Capri got caught in Moscow. And that Asia Latsis, she had a nervous breakdown. A pretty normal way for a woman to intervene in manly affairs. But Walter is the real patient, a man in need of support and recovery. This historically accurate, or so it seems to me. One of the many reasons to love him and to let him go. You want to be a member of a communist party, and you need Moscow to decide, I imagine Asya saying, go through hell. He did, Moscow Diary being a sort of divine comedy, and Moscow in winter a quiet city that delivers itself already at the stations.